Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Game Dev with Scruffy Fern. Today, I've got a returning guest, Rory O'Connor, who's been nice enough to join me again. The rant kind of fits with what you've been working with. You know, you've been just recently started your first internship as a game developer.
That's true.
So one of the biggest things, and I know that because we've been talking, you've been kind of bumping into this right off the bat, is when you come out of school, you have a lot of knowledge around building games, right? You have a lot of the knowledge around the coding. You have a lot of knowledge around, you know, how to even port to a bunch of different devices. The one thing that most people are lacking when they come out of school is management.
Yeah, right? Organizational skills.
No organizational skills. We're so used to doing projects on our own, by ourselves, you know, late nights, no deadlines, that kind of thing. So you get in that rhythm of just expecting that all the time, and then you go into a game shop, and suddenly they're like, no, we have, like, a Gantt chart, and we have, like, you know. So my biggest problem with that is no one ever really teaches you it, right? Like, you get thrown into a game studio, and it's basically, okay, just learn whatever it is that they're using and just kind of, you know, fake it till you make it sort of thing, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And just hope that, you know, nothing majorly bad happens. So what I thought was we'd take a few minutes, and we'll take a look at some of the cool tools that I've used in the past that I know you've kind of bumped into while in school as well as now just in your new internship. And we'll discuss ways to kind of help manage that so it's not such a big headache and you have a little bit of experience when you first walk in the door.
For sure.
Yeah. So it kind of boils down to this for me. I kind of put this together and I'm not 100% sold on it, but it kind of speaks what you're going to bump into. You have four major steps in the development cycle, if you will, of most games. First is planning, right? Then you have management of your plan and of your time. You have to execute that plan, right? So there's a lot of steps to go into execution. And of course, there's everyone's favorite, the repeat step.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because code is obviously constantly morphing, changing, right? One of my favorite quotes was Tom Cargill from Bell Labs when he said, the first 90% of code accounts for the first 90% of development time. The remaining 10% of the code accounts for another 90% of the development time.
Yeah.
Right? It's true, because we're notorious, like, especially in the gaming world, of saying, yeah, no problem, have it done in 6 months. 2 years later, we're shipping. Right? It's just no one really has the ability to keep these schedules because a lot of bugs get thrown in. But if you walk into it with no plan, you're more likely to hit that roadblock than you are if you have some sort of plan and can kind of mitigate the bugs as they pop up, right? Mm-hmm. So probably the biggest thing that indie game developers can do to kind of help them with this, and it's about the code. It's managing where your code's being stored, how you're doing updates, how your entire team is working with a code base. So if you have a situation where, you know, it's even two people working on a code base, and you're uploading files piecemeal as you go, you're going to bump into conflicts, right? Where you might be working on a certain file, and I'm working on that same file. I upload my changes, you upload yours, and you undo my changes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's sure, we all had that happen in the past, right? Especially in school, when you're not used to these other mechanics, that's one thing that you bump into. So the biggest way to mitigate that is through some sort of repository control or source control system, right? You use source control in the past, even in school, right?
Yeah, you use simple things like GitHub or whatever you got to use, right? Git, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, so Git is probably one of the bigger ones. You know, GitHub is huge.
Yeah.
It's a very social platform for code, which is really cool. But the underlying technology of GitHub is Git. Mm-hmm. Which is a fantastic source control system used throughout small studios to large studios. It's not so much centrally located as it is distributed. So what ends up happening is there's a bunch of people have the code in different places, but each of the chains is held in a chain set up on the master server.
Mm-hmm.
So what's really good about source control and Git and Subversion and all the rest is the fact that if someone makes a mistake and they've checked it in, or you know, so you find out later on down the road that there's an issue with some sort of code a couple of updates back, you can go back in time, so to speak, and roll back your code,
mm-hmm.
and go back to a previous update, something that worked, right? So no more of like, you know, oh my God, I broke the game and now we have to go and fix everything from scratch. Yep. You can kind of roll back to a previous build. You're smiling. I'm guessing that happened to you.
Catastrophe averted. I mean, it happens. It happens a bunch. But I mean, once you get on a repository of some sort, I mean, it's just really important to keep that going.
Yeah. Subversion's another one. It's one of the older ones. I've used it a lot. There's some great front ends for it, like Tortoise, SVN. Stuff like that. So that's another one to check out. Team Foundation Server, which is absolutely fantastic. Each one of these has like little different bonuses to it, right? Like Subversion is more centrally located. Team Foundation Server is more centrally located, whereas Git is more distributed. So you got to kind of look at what works best for you. Some of the issues like with Git is, especially with GitHub, is there's a file size restriction.
Yeah.
So you can't have a binary file or any file, actually, over 150 megabytes or something around there, or you won't be able to upload it. So if you have, like, you know, very large asset files, like a model or something that's huge textures and stuff like that, that might not be the best choice. So you kind of want to see what works best for you. And I've actually been in shops that have used multiple pieces of different ones, right? So, like, they've had, like, the art assets up on some sort of Subversion server, and then they had the code up on Git. So there's different ways to handle that, but that's the first thing. Have some place to store your code, some place to manage your code, be able to, you know, roll back if there's a mistake. You don't have to worry about two people working on the same file at the same time. Very, very important to have.
Oh, yeah.
Another big thing is task tracking. Or bug tracking, right? So you come in, you sit down, you make this plan. Now you have to execute how that plan's going to be put into practice. And if you just had like a laundry list of things to do, that's fine. But at the end of the day, you want some way to track to know, did that task get done? What task, like what part of the code was that task attached to? Things like that, right? These are very important, especially as you get further into development and you start running into things like bugs, right? Mm-hmm. You know, every time you go through an iteration, you're going to find more and more bugs. There's some way to manage these that's very, very important, especially as your team grows and your project grows. So Bugzilla, which is a very, very popular one, which is more or less geared around just tracking bugs. It does have a little bit of task management in it, but mostly more around the bug side of things. Same with Mantis. Mantis is another one that I've personally used. It does have task tracking in it, but again, it's more geared towards the bug fixes and stuff like that. Redmine, which is very, very popular in the AAA space.
Yeah.
I would say it's probably the popular solution in the AAA space. Not so much for the indies, probably due to the price tag and things like that. It's an advanced system. I would say if you're looking for a bell and whistle, Redmine's probably got that.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to find a feature it doesn't have.
Yeah, it's pretty feature rich. Trello is another great site. Right now, people have put everything from their laundry list to, you know, how to repair their car on Trello, but you could easily put your project up on it. And
yeah, it's a very social way of doing it too. Like it has that feel. It looks like you would like look at Twitter or
yeah, it's got
else.
That flat board design, so it just it feels really nice. It's all very draggy and droppy, right? So
and it works on like any device too. Like there's apps for everything too.
Yeah, quite the difference if you're used to something like a Bugzilla or a Mantis, and then you go to like a Trello, you're like, oh wow, this is very design heavy. You can kind of tell that it was the designer that created that one. But yeah, so even if it's something simple like that, just have a place to store these tasks, you know, distribute the tasks to your team members, keep track of how much time it's taking them, their workload. There's nothing worse than being like, oh, here's 15 tasks, and, you know, you just overwhelm the guy because you don't realize how much, you know, every one of those tasks takes. So having something like this that can actually predict how long it's going to take each job and stuff like that, you can kind of manage your team members' works load as well.
Yep.
Yeah. Very cool. So one thing I want to talk about is the next thing I want to talk about is Visual Studio Online, because we talked about like this idea of having source control. We had talked about the idea of having task management. What if I told you could have all of those all under one umbrella, one website, one source, all together?
Be very useful.
Very useful.
Very useful.
Very useful. So let me introduce you to Visual Studio Online.
Oh.
Right. So the really cool thing about Visual Studio Online is, yes, it has the source control. Yes, it has the task management and very detailed in depth. And we'll take a look at that a little bit further. But it also has great integration with IDE, as well as the ability to do things like builds and stuff like that. So let me just kind of walk you through some of the highlighted features. first of all, it's cloud-based code hosting. Mm-hmm. So that's your source control hosted in the cloud, distributed, you know, so has all the fun things like fallbacks and management along that without you having to worry about that or having some sort of on-prem server, you know, to pay the bills for it and have to worry about calling in an IT guy every time it goes down, right? So yeah. Having it up in the cloud, that's very, very, very handy. Like I said, it's got project management, very, very in-depth. You know, you can do Scrum and all those fun ways of managing your team's time, and it's very, very productive. I'll go a little bit more in detail about that in a few. Another big thing about it that I really, really enjoy is the build and test in the cloud. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as your game grows, you're working on these bigger and bigger games, it becomes less appealing to be basically building this on your own PC, especially as gamers, right? Because let's be honest, whenever we have to compile something, we're like, sweet, and we open up like an emulator, play an old game or something. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's how we kill our time.
That's
right?
When you go eat.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, that's your downtime as a programmer. So, you know, if you're tying up your CPU, you can't go and search Reddit for, you know, a half hour while your build's working. So having it's unfortunate, very unfortunate. So having the ability to, you know, test and build inside the cloud is very, very handy. You can monitor applications through Application Insights, which is very, very handy. So you can actually see what's going on, the health of your application or game, whatever it might be, as it's running out in the wild. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of see like, oh, like there's this kind of this problem. I'm having like a memory leak issue with, you know, X. And you can kind of see this developing in the wild and snuff out the problems before your users actually see it, right? So very, very handy. It's something that's, you know, I see a lot more developers starting to try to take a look at and see that it's a necessity more than it is a want.
Oh, yeah. It's extremely useful, especially when you don't have to write that yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just there for you.
It's a drop-in mechanic and away you go, right? So that's very, very handy. It connects with other services. So you can connect with a lot of the Azure stuff, like Azure Storage, Azure Service Buses. It connects with outside sources like Campfire, MyGit, and even Trello. Right, so if there's something that you're already working on, if you already got your, you know, a lot of your notes up on a certain service, chances are you can find a way to incorporate them or actually use that service with Visual Studio Online. And of course, it doesn't just work with Visual Studio; it also works with Xcode and Eclipse. So if you're not a Visual Studio coder or you're building your iOS build and you still want to take the get all the benefits of Visual Studio Online, you can by using inside of Xcode or Eclipse.
Nice.
Very cool. So, did I sell you on it yet?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds pretty all round.
Yeah.
I already use Visual Studio, so.
Yeah, you might as well, right?
It's a small step.
Let's take a walk through it and kind of see what it's like to create a little project. We'll make a couple of tasks, and I'll assign some stuff, and we'll see what it's like.
Sure.
Okay. So the first thing we're going to do is I'm just going to open up my web browser here. So I'm going to go to visualstudioonline.com, and the first thing I need to do is sign in. So I already did that just because I don't want to be showing my credentials online.
Okay.
So right here I have a bunch of different accounts that I've created. I've got one for myself. That's just for my personal projects. I've got one, of course, for Karma Labs, as well as another project that we've been working on as well. So if I wanted to, I could just create a brand new one right now. And it's going to ask me, like, where do you want to host this? What's the name of it? And we'll call it Scruffy Test, just because hopefully nobody else has got Scruffy Test out there.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, and then, of course, you do have the option of changing regions. South Central U.S. and I believe, Western Europe is the only two that are available at the moment. So I was going to select South Central U.S. And, of course, some nice little features that it showed out that I didn't really highlight, but I should have mentioned is it's free for 5 basic users. Mm-hmm. So if you're a small team, like a startup indie, that's perfect. You have unlimited stakeholders. So these are people that can see tasks, set tasks, see priorities and stuff like that. It's just they can't access all the features.
Yeah, management types.
The management type, exactly.
Yeah.
You can have unlimited eligible MSDN subscribers. So if your team's got a bunch of MSDN subscriptions, this will tie in very nicely. You can have unlimited team projects and private code repos. So one thing that, you know, with using like GitHub and stuff, you have to pay for private repos.
Oh, yeah.
With this, it's unlimited. So that's kind of nice. Free work item tracking for all users. Basic MS description, stakeholders, doesn't matter. About the build, you get free 60 minutes a month for a build. So depending on how big your game is, you know, 60 minutes an hour, that's a lot of build time. So
yeah,
should be pretty good there. You get free 60K virtual user minutes a month for load testing, which becomes very, very handy when you're building multiplayer games and doing server backend stuff. Having the ability to do some load testing right there inside of Visual Studio Online is very, very handy. And, you know, a bunch, much more stuff, including preview application monitoring and analytics. Yeah. Very, very cool. Lots of stuff.
Very useful.
I feel like we should have that. Why can't I hold all these memes behind this?
Can I hold all these memes?
All right, so project name. Again, I'm just going to call it Scruffy Test just because why not? And for me, process template, I'm going to pick Scrum. You can do Agile or CMMI, depending on what your project needs are. If you're having a little trouble deciding what you need, there's actually a nice little section here that says need help deciding and kind of walks through which each one is. Most of the time we use Scrum for what we work with. And then, of course, it allows you to pick between two version controls. You can either do Team Foundation version control or do Git. Mm-hmm. So in this case, I'm just going to select Git because I'm expecting this to be a smaller project, just a couple of guys, and somebody that's already got, you know, maybe familiar with Git would be a little bit easier for them. So let's create our project there.
There we go.
So after a couple seconds, it will build it, and it comes up with, you know, the congratulations little window here and asks me, do you want to go to the board, which is where we can manage our tasks, or do you want to jump right into the code and start messing with the code? I'm just going to close this out so I can walk you through a few different things and kind of show you how to get started. So right off the bat, there's a couple of really fun things that I like that I kind of want to point out before we get into setting up our workflow. The first thing is the team rooms. So the Scruffy Test team room, basically what this does is it's a little chat dialogue for all the team members working on that project. So it's great if you just, you know, maybe you're working late or something and you find a fix or you have a question for somebody on the team, you can just drop it in here and they can answer it as they come and go, and it has the ability to save and stuff like that. Nice little feature. I know it doesn't seem like much, but when you're working on a large team, having that ability just to drop a message to someone and have it all tracked and stuff like that is pretty impressive.
You don't always have everybody's information everywhere, like on Skype or something like
that. Right, yeah. If they have access to the source code, then they have access to this room, so you can get a hold of them, right? All right, so I'm going to go back to overview. And this is the main page when you first come to your account in Visual Studio Online. And it'll show the projects that are available, as well as like the room I said, stuff like that. It gives you a bunch of little information too. If you want to know a little bit more about the pricing and stuff like that, there's information there at the top. So I'm just going to open up Scruffy Test. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to add a member, because right now it's just me. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go to Manage. I'm going to add a member. I'm going to see. Hopefully I still have all my... No, I don't. Okay, so we're gonna search for you, Rory.
Okay.
So what's your email address?
Zenetics, X-E-N-E.
X-E-N-E. N-E.
T-I-C-S.
Oh, sorry, I'm not typing.
Okay.
X-E-N-E.
N-E. T-I-C-S.
T-C-I-S.
T-I-C-S.
Oh. Like that?
Yep. At live.
At live. .c, I'm guessing?
No, .com.
.com. Okay, so I'll save changes. Now it's going to go out and try to find you. There you go, Rory Angus O'Connor.
That's me.
Yep, there you go. Now you're part of my group.
Awesome.
So
can't wait.
Don't break my code.
I'm going to not do that.
I hope not. I'll kick you off the team.
That would be a shame.
All right, so now if I wanted to, I could drop a message to you. And then in the chat room, I can start doing all the fun stuff like, you know, creating workflow. So, you know, I'm the manager type. You're the programmer type, so I'm going to go in here and I'm going to go to my work, select that, and this is going to bring up your backlog. Oh, actually, I clicked the how-to instead of actually the what I wanted to here. So if I go up here to the top and click work instead of that, that's the how-to section, so it actually is going to walk me through how to set this all up. But
very useful nonetheless.
Very useful, but I'm trying to show you how to do that, so I won't
of course
actually walk through that. Okay, so the first thing it's saying is, like, you know, you're going to create backlog items. So these are the tasks and to-dos that you kind of want to assign the team, right? So I'm just going to create a basic one, which is, like, you know, create default project or create project. And I'm just going to click add. And that just basically just creates this backlogged item that needs to be done by someone eventually, right? Now, because I'm using Scrum, we have this system of what they call sprints, right? Mm-hmm. In Agile, I think it's stories or iterations. It can be called a bunch of different things, but basically it's a time frame that it should take to create the latest build, if you will, or the latest version of your work. So if we go down here to Sprint 1. What it does is it allows me to basically create a list of backlog items that are going to be attached to just that specific time frame.
Yeah.
Right? So what I'm going to do first before I start adding backlogs to this is I'm going to set some dates. Mm-hmm. Right? So how long I want this iteration or sprint to take?
20 minutes.
Yeah, sure. 20 minutes. Sounds about right. So we'll pick the start date. We'll pick today's date. We'll pick the end date. I'll be nice and give you guys a couple of weeks to do. A week. That's enough.
I guess.
I want you working fast.
I'm not even sure what I'm doing yet, but I guess I can do it in that time frame.
Okay. Well, you're going to be having this task of building a project. So I'm going to save and close this. And now what it's going to do is you'll notice up here on the side that I have 6 work days remaining on this sprint. Right? So it's going to keep track of how much remaining time is, how much the workload is, that sort of stuff, and display it up here in the corner. So now if I go to backlog items, where we created our fun little task, if I grab this, I can actually drag it and drop it right into my sprint. And now if I go back to my sprint, you'll notice I now have create project inside my sprint. So this is the overall to-do, right? Now you can break this down into smaller chunks, right? Yeah. So for me, I'm thinking, okay, create project, there could be a couple of extra little things that need to do, right? So we're going to create a new task that's built off of that one. And we'll say, open Visual Studio. So open Visual Studio. Very simple task.
Oh, yes. But thanks for letting me know I have to do that.
Yeah. But, you know, like a toy example, obviously.
Of course.
But, you know, you kind of get the point. And then what you can say is activity, you can kind of mark down who does this belong to, what is this deployment, is this development, right? So for you, it's development, obviously. I can write a little task in there.
Yeah, in there you could say exactly what you got to do, right? Like what type of project? Because that hasn't been mentioned yet. So you could be like, create this type of project for this platform. You know, maybe you need these certain SDKs. Pretty good.
So there you go. So a little bit of to-do and stuff like that. And then, of course, the big important part is who do I assign it to? So if you look up here, you have assign to. If I click the drop-down, I can select you. And then I click save and close. And now, right off the bat, you see I have create project. Underneath that, I have a task of open Visual Studio. And it's been assigned to yourself. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of extra things that you can do in here. Like you can put how much time that each person how much effort it takes for each task, and then how much effort a day each person can generally do. And so if it's like a novice programmer, you might want to give them like a 6, and then like a senior programmer, you might want to give them a 9. And then depending on the level of requirements, it's going to let you know, like, you're overloading that person or something like that. I won't go too depth on that, but you can definitely play around with it. It's pretty cool. Of course, there's other features, like being able to automatically email that out. So right now, you're probably getting an email that says, hey, you got a new task. Go ahead and do this. And, of course, we said we liked the fact that it had, like, that flat design on Trello.
Oh, yeah.
So check out this board. I love this. So right here is our board design. It's kind of like that flat design.
Oh, yeah.
So right now you have a to-do here. So if you wanted to, you could just grab this to-do and drop it into the in progress. And as soon as you do that, it's going to change a bunch of settings in the background, but it's going to start tracking time, and a bunch of different fun things to kind of keep track of how long it took to do that so that we can make better judgments on assigning you new tasks in the future. Right?
So it's literally like an on-screen Scrum board, like you would do on like a cork board or a whiteboard.
Exactly, that's exactly what it is. It's a Scrum board.
It's perfect, but it controls the data too.
It saves some post-it notes, right? So that's pretty cool. So
the environment.
Yeah, and then once you're done, you can just drag it from in progress to done. Hmm. And it'll come up as done. It'll show it up here. Actually, I'll just drop it into done.
Yeah, I finished it.
And then if we go back to our backlog, now you'll notice that task is no longer highlighted. It's still there, but you'll notice its state is now done.
Yep, that Rory always on the ball.
Works hard. So that's great. We've created some tasks and everything, but now we need to start building the code inside of Visual Studio, right? So that's our next step. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to open this up in Visual Studio. Which is the link right up here at the top. Mm-hmm. And when I click that, just through TV magic, I've already got it open, it will open up my Visual Studio. And the first thing you'll notice is Team Explorer. So this is where we're going to be working on our project. This is where we'll do our commits of our changes, check out work items and stuff like that. But the first thing you'll notice is it's asking me to clone my repository. So basically, this is just creating a holder for the project on my hard drive, making a copy of it, if you will. Mm. If you were using TFS, it might come up and say, set up your workspace or something similar. But again, it's just basically making a copy for your local machine.
Okay.
So if I click clone this repository, it's going to ask me where do I want to clone it. By default, it sticks it in your user folder under source/repos, which can be kind of hard to find if you're not familiar with it. So if you want to put this like closer to your root directory of your drive, that might be a good idea. But for us, we'll be okay. I'm just going to go ahead and click clone. So that's actually creating the repository now. Now if I click on Solution Explorer, you'll notice that it's just empty. And that's because we cloned the file system, but there's nothing in the file system. We haven't actually put anything there.
Yeah.
So I guess our next step would be to actually create the project. But before I do that, because one of the tasks, and I know I gave you this task, but I'll do it myself this time. I'll let you off the hook this one time, Rory. Okay?
Thanks, boss.
No problem. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go, now if I had a premium or ultimate version of Visual Studio, what I could do here is just where it says home, and if I click my drop down, you would see my work would be one of the options that would be listed. And you could just kind of drag and drop the tasks, much like you do on the board on the web. Directly inside of Visual Studio, but I'm actually using Community Edition here, which is the equivalent of Pro, so that feature is not supported, which is no big deal because we can actually do that quite easily outside of Visual Studio anyway, or any way you like, but I'll show you the easiest way to do it right now. So I'm going to go back to our home site here, and I'm going to go up to Work, and I'm going to go to our Sprint, which is our current Sprint, Sprint 1. I'll pick the to-do that I'm looking at, which is the creating the project. Now, I have in here open Visual Studio, but we already did that. But we'll pretend that this is the creating the project or whatever it might be. So what I can do here is I can go to the board at the top. And you might notice that there's a 3 here. What I did was added 3. That's the amount of time that it will take. It's in hours.
Okay.
I really hope it doesn't take, 3 hours for you to open up Visual Studio.
Let's hope not.
We would have to have a talk after work if that was the case. But it lets you
things.
Yeah, it lets you at least keep track of how much time it takes to do each task, right? Mm-hmm. And align each task to time. So what we're going to do is we're just going to drag this into in progress because this is the task I'm actually working on, right? So now it's in progress and it's actually going to track time and all those fancy things. So we'll go back to Visual Studio now. And like I said, we don't have a solution or anything, right, that's empty. So the first thing we want to do is create a new project, create a new solution to put into our file hierarchy. So I'm going to go up here and I'm going to click New right underneath the solutions. Mm-hmm. And that's going to allow me to create a new solution in the same space and attached to the repository that we're working in. So for us, let's do C#. We'll do a store app, universal apps, of course. We'll do a blank app. I'm just going to leave it called App 1. Don't need to change any of that. And this is going to actually create our solution for us. Apparently my license has expired. I am using Windows 10, so they tend to expire quickly as you go through the different preview builds. Apparently I forgot my password. There we go. So that's just grabbing me a new license for the technical preview here. And there we go. And there we go. So it's actually created the solution for us. This is a universal app, so it has both for Windows and for Windows Phone Point or 8.1. So that's great. Like, we could make changes in here and do all the fun stuff. But what I like to do is when I first create a project from template code like this, I like to upload that base right away so that I have a starting point for my repository. So there's no changes, just a blank, you know, canvas to start with. So we're going to do that. We're going to actually go ahead and just check this in as is.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to Team Explorer. And you'll notice here I have a bunch of icons. Mm-hmm. The one I'm going to select is Changes. And it's going to ask me to basically enter whatever it is that I want for my message, right? You should kind of make this pretty descriptive because other people are going to read it, and this is how they're going to know what you've changed without having to actually look through the files and see what the differences are. So for me, I'm just going to say, you know, first commit code base. All right. And then if I click commit, what this does is it actually makes a commit. This isn't syncing it to the server. This is basically just storing all the changes that we've made, like a snapshot of those changes, into a commit that we can then upload.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for this is you could do multiple commits and then sync if you wanted to. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that right off the bat, especially if you're new to this, because you might make changes that you can always roll back on them. That is set up that way, that you could go from change set to change set, but at the end of the day, if you've done a commit, just try to sync it. It keeps everybody in rhythm, right? So if I click up here, it says, you know, sync to share your changes with the server. If I click that, it'll bring up and it'll say, like, you know, what branch do you want to select? So
yep.
The cool thing about Git and other repository systems is you can have branches,
okay,
which it means that you can have, like, you know, a prototype branch, maybe a unstable branch, a stable branch. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to mess up the good finished code that you might want to go and show someone, right?
Yeah.
So if you're making, you know, a bunch of different changes and are worried how it's going to work out, maybe you make another branch and commit to that instead. But for us, again, we don't do that, so we're just going to commit directly to master. So if I go here and I just click sync, what it's going to do is it's going to pull down the current branch. But we got an error. Mm. And it dawned on me as I was sitting here kind of thinking real quick, we don't have anything to sync. So what happens is it tries to do a pull request for the first time, but there's nothing in the repository.
Yeah.
So it's erroring on the fact that there's nothing to pull down.
Mm-hmm.
So simple fix is what we'll do is we'll just, for the first time that we're committing code, we're going to do a push.
Okay.
But after that, we can do sync. Sync will work fine. But so for the first time, and this is actually good that this popped up because I didn't notice this before. I usually, when I create a repository, I usually have like a README file in there. Mostly for this reason is sometimes Git will have issues pulling down blank files. So this is good to kind of bump into. So what we'll do is we'll do a push. I'm going to click push here. There you go. So now what we've done is we've successfully pushed our commit to the original. So if I click sync now, it'll actually, see, now it can actually fetch and pull down and everything, and everything's fine. So in fact, if I wanted to, for the sake of showing it, I'll just put a little commit or a little comment here, like this. And now if I go to my Team Explorer, and I go to unsync commits, I go to changes, you'll notice now that I have a little change here.
Yep.
And that's because I put this little line here that says comment. So, you know, just test commit, right? So I give it a little what it's about. Then I click commit again. It's going to, of course, ask you to save it, which is always a good idea.
Yep.
So we've created the commit. Next step is to sync. So we're going to go ahead and click sync out there. And you'll notice this time when we click sync, it successfully syncs with no errors.
Of course.
Right? So there you go. That's how you commit and pull down and changes and stuff like that. And again, like if somebody else made it a change, you could sync and it would pull down their changes and all that. That's how you go through that. So that's like a very high level overview of it. Definitely, like I said, check out the links in the video that we'll show in a second there to get a little bit deeper. But this is like a good starting point to go with. So we've committed, right? So in essence, we've added the code from the to-do. that we've done. So again, I'll show you the simplest way to do this. If we just go back to the website, let's go to my website here. I'm back at the board. Now that I've committed, I'm done my task. So I'm just going to drag the task into done. And now that's officially done. You'll notice the time disappears and that task is complete.
Hmm. Okay.
Right? So now the next thing would be I was looking for my next task and I would, again, like we said, repeat the cycle.
Yep.
Right, if you remember at the beginning, I said that one of the most important parts of the cycle, if you will, is the repeating it. And you'll be doing a lot of that with new tasks as they get added. But yeah, it's a pretty good overview of what Visual Studio Online can do for you. It's very handy. I love the fact that it basically incorporates everything you could need, you know, to build your game. And like I said, it's got the build settings in there, test and deployment systems. You know, you can even manage or monitor your app through Application Insights. Everything's connected and works pretty seamlessly. As you can see, all the features kind of work really well with one another. So it feels like you're being more productive, I find, with this, right? It's a lot better than no plan.
And it keeps the management types happy.
Exactly. All right, so I'm just going to jump back over to my slide deck and just... Here we go. So pop over here. Basically, I just wanted to show you guys these useful links. The first link here is visualstudio.com/get-started, get-started/setup. And that is basically like a great little web page with how to do everything you could think of. One of the features that I didn't mention that I really love is when you're using Team Foundation Server, you can actually ask for code reviews directly from the editor. Hmm. So before you check in your code, sometimes you're like, oh, I don't know if this is the best practice or if maybe I might have, you know, there might be a better way to do this. I could actually ask for a code review, select somebody from my team, and it'll add it as a task to their list to check out my code before I commit it. So little things like that, right? And it'll walk you through how to do all that. It'll talk about the differences between Scrum and Agile and all the different ways you can do the management on that side. So definitely the number one place to go when you're looking for, like, how do I do this in Visual Studio Online? That's where you want to go. And then below that, we have channel9.msdn.com/events/build/2014. I'm just looking at the producer. Remind me to put this in the show notes because that's a really long URL. But this video is a great overview of like a walkthrough of how to use Visual Studio Online. It talks about some of the stuff that I talked, but it goes a lot more in depth. I think it's just a little bit over an hour or so.
Okay.
So it goes a lot deeper into the weeds, if you will, on all these little topics and stuff like that.
It's good.
But yeah, no, not too bad. I personally love it. I think it's a great system. Like I said, for speeding up production and getting your projects moving forward. And you know, they become a beast, right? The bigger they get, the harder they are to control. So having something like this to rein it all in is very, very important.
One of the biggest pitfalls is just self-organization. Mm-hmm. You lose what you're doing. What was I doing? You know,
I use this even on my own projects. If it's just me, myself, believe it or not, I actually have a Scrum board for myself just so I know. Because if you walk away from a project for even a couple of days and come back, it's nice to have that. What was I working on? Where did I leave off?
Right? Exactly.
It's very, very handy. So enough about Visual Studio Online. I think I sold you on it, hopefully. And, you know, you're going to run out and tell all your employers in the future to get on VSO and use that.
Maybe. Wait until I have a job first.
Okay, sounds good. Well, speaking of like projects and stuff that you've been working on, like we always do, I like to take a few minutes just to kind of show off what you've been working on and kind of highlight some of the cool stuff in the community. So you got a game today to demo that we talked a little bit about, but I really like the mechanics. I'll let you go a little bit more deep about what it is.
Okay. I'll just start it up here. It's the intro.
Love the logo, by the way.
Yep, it's my my studio. So it's called Impaired. Basically, it plays off of the fact that I personally have limited vision in one of my eyes. So when I'm outdoors, the light really affects me. So I find myself blinking a lot. Like I'll walk and I'll close my eyes and I'll open them so I can see where I'm going, sort of thing. And I thought one day, I'm like, well, that would be kind of a cool game if you only had vision partially, part of the time, right? So when you're playing the game, it's just a basic runner. I was going to take the idea in a more of a direction. So you see, you can't see anything. And you got this bar up the top that's vision. So we jump and, well, I hit something because I couldn't see it. So let's jump back in. We got unlucky, we got spikes right at the beginning, so you can see, But the vision bar is going down.
Oh, so the longer you hold the ability to see, the less vision bar you have. And I'm guessing the object is get as far as you can without running out of vision, right?
Exactly. The object of this mode is just that. And then you'll see these white dots that you can see up there. If I jump and I get it, well, it'll give me some more vision. And then there's some spikes that if I hit, it'll kill us like the last time. But you can crouch, go under stuff. That's an obstacle. But, oh, we ran out of vision, so... Okay, we're getting lucky now.
And now we just got to pray.
Yeah, now we're just praying. We don't know if there's a pit coming up. Well, there is clearly a wall there that pushed us off. But that builds into a higher gameplay that I was going to... Well, I am currently implementing. It's like an invisible maze mode where you can't see anything. So this mode would sort of teach you, this is what happens when you hit spikes. This is what happens when you fall down a pit. This is what it looks like to jump and all that stuff. Because without vision, you have no reference. So in this other mode, you're walking around this maze that you have no reference of where the walls are. You don't know where the pitfalls are. And you'll hit something, and you'll be like, okay, so noted for next time, there's a spike there. Go start again. Hopefully you get over that spike, get a bit further. And then if the rage doesn't induce too far, then maybe you can beat the level or something like that.
Yeah, that's a really, really cool mechanic. I'm just like sitting here thinking, like, imagine how hard Mario would have been if that was
exactly.
The mechanic in it, right?
That was the idea. It's like take something simple and then try to add like... you know, a mechanic that, just one more mechanic that might make it a bit harder. So.
Yeah. And that's what I love about the indie scene, right, is all these unique mechanics for games, right? It's not just a platformer, it's not just a first-person shooter. There's these really unique, different ways of playing a game that, you know, like, honestly, that's not something I would have thought of right off the bat, right?
Exactly.
And it's cool how you kind of took your own personal experience, right, and something that you literally struggle with daily, and were able to turn it into something really cool.
Yeah, I mean, simple controls, the game... There's not much to it, but you add a nice mechanic and maybe it can be something, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thanks very much for showing that. That's really cool. I can't wait to see what it looks like a little bit later on and you get a chance to play it.
Yeah, no
awesome.
Problem.
Well, thanks again for joining me today and working through all this fun project management stuff.
Oh, it was awesome. Yeah, I always take something away myself. So.
Yeah, yeah, and like I said, it was really cool because when we were talking, it was one of the biggest challenges you were having starting out with your internship. So I thought, you know, get you back in here and kind of share your experiences. But definitely appreciate it. And thanks again for everybody for tuning in and hanging out with us. Hopefully you learned something and you're ready to go out and create an even bigger project and still be able to keep it all under control and keep all your teammates happy.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, and happy coding.